You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
To stimulate your thinking.
You're listening
to
Intellectual Erection.
Intellectual Erection.
Передачу, где мы говорим о диспутам субъекта секса.
Мы говорим о любви.
To stimulate your thinking.
Welcome to another episode of Intellectual Erection. I'm your host, Patrick. This episode is a recording from a Facebook live talk that I did recently for Do More Photographers Collective. They put together a webinar series, and I had this talk on polyamory. Don't try to convert the monogamous. This is not evangelical work. So I basically discuss what I've learned and experienced from my personal life as well as those of my guests that have been on the podcast. So it's a pool of information on polyamory, everything from ethics, engaging in the different types of polyamorous relationships, and some of the challenges and rewards of polyamory. I also would like to mention that I am still currently looking for BIPOC voices to amplify and center on this podcast. I'm in the process of trying to communicate with more humans in order to make that happen. So if you do have any suggestions, if you know any BIPOC sex educators, sex workers, or generally sex positive humans, please send them my way and I will try to engage them in interviews for this podcast. And without further ado, here is the episode. And as always, listen, subscribe, review, and most of all, enjoy. All right. It looks like we are live. Okay, this is my first live, so I hope I'm doing this correctly. This being my first Facebook Live. I hope everyone can hear me. Yes, we can hear you and see you. Okay, so we're going to begin. I'm going to be talking about polyamory. And basically, most of this information that I have on polyamory I've gathered from my experience with the podcast and the humans that I've interviewed. So it's been a long and wonderful road of learning from a variety of humans from all walks of life. And I'm going to share some of those lessons with you, what I've learned along the way. So I'm going to title this Polyamory or How to Love a Lot of Fucking Humans. The first thing I want to do is sort of define polyamory. So I'm going to treat the first part of this kind of like a 101, even though many of you might already be familiar with polyamory. Maybe it's nice to have a little bit of a refresher on what polyamory means. So first, what is not polyamory? And there's a bunch of terms out there, of course, that I'm sure you've heard of, such as polygamy, polygyny, and polyandry. But they tend to follow a very heteronormative model because under the umbrella of polygamy, which has polygyny and polyandry, it just means typically the marriage between a traditional man and traditional woman or many women, or a woman and many husbands. And in this case, it follows the sort of tradition of marriage. So polygamy is definitely not tied into polyamory, despite them sharing the poly prefix. There's also open relationships. So open relationships, or what Dan Savage has coined monogamish, basically means that in a typical couple between two people, you have some boundaries and parameters under which you're willing to explore with other people. So it's typically the setting of certain rules and conditions under which you're allowed to engage sexually with another person, but your commitment is to the relationship that you currently have. So in special circumstances, let's fuck other people too. That's kind of the open relationship model, or what Dan Savage calls monogamish. There's also swingers. Swingers comes from a culture in the 1960s and 70s, and of course the hippies got very happy and wanted to share love. Now, swinger communities still exist. They tend to be very white, very heteronormative, and the model is typically based off of couple swapping. So you'll have a typically heteronormative couple that swaps partners for sex. Now, when we get to polyamory, you might have heard the term polyamory or ethical non-monogamy. Ethical non-monogamy would be the long form of polyamory. But my personal issue with the term ethical non-monogamy is that it's a non-something. And I don't want to be a non-something, right? I don't want to be a deviation from what's considered the norm, because that only enforces the idea that the norm is monogamy. So instead of a non-something, I prefer the term polyamory, because it encompasses something that stands alone. It's not in contrast to monogamy. It's not a deviation from monogamy. And it doesn't try to establish something as the norm that we sort of get away from. Even though, for the most part, it is what we're doing, because the norm still tends to be monogamy. So polyamory, by definition, is the ability to love multiple humans, because love is not a limited resource. It's to engage in multiple ethical and consensual relationships with more than one partner. That's basically it. So it's not necessarily a relationship that needs to include sex, although sex is often included. Polyamory tends to take a model of looking at the relationship that you base with the person that's typically romantic. And you can definitely have romantic relationships without sex. And of course, we do have them very often with sex. I would recommend to anyone who is interested in polyamory that your first step ought to be reading some resources. And I can never stop recommending Easton and Hardy's The Ethical Slut enough, because it is basically the Bible for sex-positive ethical sluts and polyamorists alike. And there's a lot of information there that touches on how to engage in relationships with an ethics-forward approach. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I typically like to put the ethics forward. So we talk about consent, we talk about setting up boundaries, we talk about how to engage in relationships while maintaining a sort of ethics at the beginning, before you engage, before you start that relationship. And I think The Ethical Slut is a really good resource for understanding how to approach that. I'm going to read a little passage that I really enjoy from The Ethical Slut. So it goes, "We must ask, if monogamy is the only acceptable option, the only true form of love, then are these agreements genuinely consensual? If you believe that you have no other choice, we believe that you lack the agency that underlies informed consent. We have many friends who have chosen to be monogamous, and we applaud them. But how many people in our society consciously make that choice?" So I think this says a lot. What it says first is it challenges the notion that monogamy is consensual. Because if you enter a relationship where the normative parameters are preset to such a degree that you don't ever have to ask yourself, what are the rules and norms of engaging in a relationship, then you've basically fallen into something, a traditional script or a pattern, without necessarily consenting. Because there are certain behaviors that are expected of you that you are supposed to already know. How do you know these things? You know them from media, you learn them from your family, you see them all around you, and you learn to replicate those behaviors. But if you don't actually think about why and how, and if you're interested in doing those things, then there's never really a sense of agency, a sense of freedom in your behavior, because you haven't asked yourself and you haven't considered if there are other possible options. And when something's given to you with the notion that there's no other possible options, it's sort of a forced choice. And when something's a forced choice, it lacks what we in the sex positive community like to push as consent. Because consent means that you are able to make this decision sober consciously and with a good level of thinking about your needs and the needs of other people. Now, that is to say, if you've seen the options, if you've read about monogamy, if you've read about polyamory, and you know for yourself what you want, then that choice is free. At that point, you can consensually say, I want to be monogamous, which is fine. I'm not here to preach otherwise. I never have. And if you've heard the podcast, I've made that statement plenty of times where I've said, you know, polyamory is something that I find to be personally liberating, but I know it's not for everyone. So having said that, the point of polyamory is to educate beyond the borders of just engaging in the relationships themselves. It's also to point out that by learning about polyamory, you're actually also learning about monogamy. And if you know now about monogamy a little more, you can make that consensual decision to be a monogamous human. There are many types of polyamory. There's not just one. It's typically an umbrella term for a variety of relationship models. And some of them are a little bit more common than others. I'm sure you've heard of some of these. So there's something called solo polyam or solo poly, which basically means that you live alone and you probably don't necessarily want a commitment with anybody, but you still engage in the ethics of polyamory. So this is what I mean by an ethics first approach, which is what I enjoy about people who take polyamory seriously, is that you make considerations before you engage in any sort of relationship. So if I have no partners right now and somebody were to ask me, you know, what are you looking for? Or the sort of traditional like engagement in what type of relationship or whatever. If I'm on a date, I would say I am a solo polyam, and I'll tell you why I use polyam instead of poly in a bit, because I want that person to know that if I do engage in a relationship with them, sexual or if we start dating, they need to know that I am open to having multiple relationships with multiple humans, and that that is something that needs to be communicated and consented to by both parties. I don't want to dupe somebody into starting a relationship with me on the pretense that they're going to receive a monogamous relationship from me, because they won't. And if you're not upfront about that, then you can get into a lot of shitty situations and make a bad name for polyamory or have a terrible experience with polyamory, which does tend to happen, and people will back out. It's too difficult. It's too complex. There's too many hurdles, some people would say. And that's because some of us haven't done the work to practice polyamory in the most ethical way possible, which is actually quite difficult. So it's not an easy route. It's not a way of kind of getting your cake and eating it too, or having sex with lots of people. It is that, but that requires work. So if you're in it just for the sex, you might want to just reassess. Maybe you just want to have open relationships. So I would say to somebody, I'm solo polyam, even when I'm not in a relationship, so that they know what to expect from a relationship with me, whether it's temporary, sexual, one-night stand, whatever. A polyamorous triad. That's often called a thruple. It's like having a permanent threesome all the time. But the thruple is very common. And there are some issues with the thruple model. It's one of the most popular forms of polyamory. And there's a number of reasons for that. The first being that extending your relationship beyond two people to have a third committed relationship is extremely challenging, time-consuming, and a lot of people might not have the resources or the spoons, right? The emotional ability to engage with that many people on a committed level. And that's understandable. So there are healthy ways to engage in a thruple relationship. And then there are less healthy ways of doing it. And that particular model of polyamory tends to have a lot of the bullshit polyamory in it, which I'm going to talk about in a sec. Then there's hierarchical polyamory, which means you're my primary, you're my secondary, maybe you're my tertiary, and so on and so forth. That means that I have one relationship that I prioritize above the other relationships that I have. And this might make sense for somebody who is married with children. I have my primary partner, we have children together, and then I have my secondary partner on which I go on dates with every week. And then I have my tertiary partner, which I see when they come from out of town. And with those people, I still have a caring relationship of love, but my primary focus is on my partner with whom I have children and I share a home. There's non-hierarchical polyamory, which takes the model of having anchor or nesting partners. That means it's like hierarchical in the sense that you have a primary, but now you have several primaries, and they're no longer called primaries. They're called something like anchor or nesting partners, which means that you could be living with two partners, with three partners, or you live alone and you have anchor partners that you share a similar sort of level of priority and commitment with. And then there's my personal favorite, relationship anarchy. And for me, this is the most liberating model of polyamory. It does not mean that you do whatever the fuck you want. It really doesn't. It means that you are constantly working at your relationship. You're constantly negotiating and renegotiating. And there are no preset rules. We don't have primaries. We don't have anchors necessarily. We don't have throuples or any of that. There's no set script. With each relationship that you engage in relationship anarchy, things are expected to change. And you adapt and you reset boundaries and you keep having negotiations and communications so that the relationship is allowed to evolve. And sometimes, and this has happened, that relationship evolves outside of a romantic relationship and into a friendship. And that has been, in all honesty, one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had since I've become polyamorous. I was in a polyamorous relationship with somebody and things were not working out in that I could not meet the needs of this person. But instead of having the breakup that I was used to in monogamous relationships, which for me have been devastating, the breakups that I've had have been absolutely some of the worst and most painful experiences I've ever had. And it was so relieving to finally have a relationship that didn't have to die with somebody that I loved and that I continue to love today. We just are no longer in a committed, romantic, sexual relationship. We still care about each other. We still say, I love you. But we've transitioned to becoming friends. And that sometimes means we do have sex. Rarely and far between, and sometimes we're there for each other, and we can always rely on one another to have ongoing communication. So that is what I like about relationship anarchy, is that things are allowed to change without the devastating effects of either or. You don't have to be in or be out of a relationship in the traditional sense. You don't have to make or break, create and destroy, because we're so used to doing that, and these painful experiences just make us jaded and cynical about having healthy relationships. And I think relationship anarchy really allows for growth in a healthy sense where that support isn't cut off. Even if you have to say to somebody, hey, you know what, I need some time away from you, and then we come back and reassess, that is something that you negotiate together. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about critical polyamory. So we talk about all the really good things about polyamory. We talk about the liberation, we talk about the love and all the benefits that come of it. But we also have to be critical in our approach. So the first thing I want to say is that the short form for polyamory is contentious. When people say poly, it's contentious because it's an identifier of the Polynesian community. So if you're Polynesian, if you're from Samoa, American Samoa, even parts of Hawaii and New Zealand, then you might identify as poly. And it's a very simple verbal linguistic change that we have to make. So the suggestions have been from within the community that we shorten it to polya or polyam. I prefer polyam because I think you can hear it better. If I'm talking to you, blah, 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 Polya. If I say Polya like that, you might not hear the A. But if I say Polyam, you definitely hear the hard M at the end. So I definitely prefer to usually shorten it to Polyam. Otherwise, if you're not comfortable with that, just say polyamory every time. Don't be lazy. Let's talk about that thruple situation. So thruples are common. They're common for a reason. But they're also common because they fall into some unfortunate models of what horny men typically want, which is to have two girlfriends. And that tends to be a very common sort of polyamory model. One dude gets two girlfriends and engages in what's been criticized as lesbian fetishism. And what can be even worse than that is if in that thruple you have the one penis rule. That means that you create a boundary where your two girlfriends, and I'm using binary gender here just to paint a picture that it is a sort of heteronormative and heterosexist model of polyamory, because you are not really being polyamorous. What you're doing is you're trying to have your cake and eat it too. The one penis rule basically says you cannot have sex with any other penises outside of this relationship. Only with me and with each other and with other women. So that has a lot of problematic undertones. Actually, they're overtones. They're not really undertones. A one penis rule and lesbian fetishism. The other thing with critical polyamory that I'd like to address is the work of Kim Tallbear, who is an indigenous scholar, and their work is on monogamy and polyamory, and they say that basically monogamy is a colonial and oppressive construct. They call it a settler sexuality. Settler sexuality. So I think it's important to kind of dive into this as well, to look at criticisms of the model of monogamy from BIPOC voices. So I would recommend the work of Kim Tallbear on decolonial polyamory. And I would also recommend looking into other prominent sex educators who do talk about polyamory and sex positivity, such as Erica Hart. You can find them also on Instagram. I believe their Instagram is, yes, iHeartErica. So it's I-H-A-R-T. E-R-I-C-K-A. I can possibly put it into the chat here at some point. So do look into that because it's important, especially now, to listen to BIPOC voices from the sex positive communities so that we're not creating a white sex positivity. And this goes for all sorts of activist spaces, all sorts of fights for progression tend to be led by white folks, and it turns into a sort of white appropriation. And again, this kind of brings forth the same colonial history of white supremacy. So we need to put BIPOC people at the front, and I think I need to do some work in this podcast to highlight that as well and bring Black trans women to the front and have their voices heard, which means I have to do some digging and some work to get those humans on the podcast. I've been asked to do that by activists like Maggie Strano, and hopefully I can bring that forward in the future. I also want to talk about some misconceptions of polyamory. These are pretty common, and you might have heard them. So some of the misconceptions about polyamory: so you just want to cheat. Obviously not. In what I've just been talking about, the notion of putting your ethics forward, it's not about that. Maybe you want to cheat the patriarchy. And the reason I say that is because the sort of nuclear family heteronormative model is definitely a construct that assists capitalism. There's a lot of critical work about that, about how the family unit is the perfect capitalist unit, economically speaking, and why having the nuclear family unit does benefit capitalism. I don't know how much I can get into it here without going off on a tangent, but I would recommend looking into that. The other misconception would be you must not like commitment. Well, to the contrary, we like a lot of commitment. We like commitment to multiple people, and it takes a lot of work to do that. You're just a slut. Thank you. Yes. And also no, not just a. Proudly a slut, but beyond being a slut, I'm a human who's invested in the ethics of non-monogamous relationships, or polyamorous relationships, as I prefer to say. It's just a phase. Hopefully not. For some, it might be. And this is one of the defeating aspects of polyamory, is you might end up meeting people who are in it for the short term, who are just testing the waters, who have not done this before. And for them, it might be a phase. And that happens to the best of us. And it can be very deflating to end up in a relationship with somebody who at some point says, you know what, this isn't for me, and just kind of leaves you stranded. And that's an unfortunate reality, but I'd take that over monogamous heartbreak any day. You can be my affair. This is another aspect of ethics. You know, if people want to have an affair with you, and because you're polyamorous, you can make a decision to engage with somebody who wants to have extramarital relationships with you, or they don't need to be married necessarily, but they're in a couple and they want to cheat on their partner with you, the ethics are yours to put up front and to say, you know, it's not, I don't want to be the catalyst for your cheating behavior. You need to be honest with your partner and say that you want something outside of that relationship, or end that relationship if it's toxic or if it's not for you. Now, the rewards of polyamory. What are some of the rewards of polyamory? Well, my favorite reward is freedom. I feel at liberty to be myself, to engage in relationships as I prefer, to be honest about my needs, my sluttiness, and to be able to have honest and open communication about those needs. There's multiple sources of support. This is another reward that I find, is that the polyamorous community can be supportive and tightly knit and incestuous, not in the real way, but in the sense that everybody kind of knows each other. And that's typical of the sex positive community, actually, where we're kind of small-ish and incestuous. But that also means that you get a lot of support from a lot of caring people. It can resist heteronormativity and the patriarchy. I talked about this a little bit. So in a sense, you know, fuck the nuclear family, and we get to have nuclear orgies. And it teaches you communication. This is probably the most important thing you will learn from polyamory. And this is the part of polyamory that extends outside of just polyamory and into other communities. So I would say that even if you're not interested in polyamory for yourself, look into it for what it can teach you about communication, because those are transferable skills that you can learn from polyamory and apply to your monogamous relationship. And I'm going to talk about some of those constructs. That doesn't mean that polyamory doesn't come with its challenges. And some of the common ones that you will see are jealousy, which does happen. And the important aspect of it is not to deny it. It is something that affects maybe all of us. There's some people who maybe don't experience jealousy, but for the most part, the majority do. Some forms of jealousy, and it's okay that that experience is happening. What you can learn to do is deal with it in healthy ways. You treat jealousy as an event that you and your partner work together to diffuse. And you see where your place in that jealousy comes from, maybe some insecurities. And maybe it's just a matter of you wanting to know more information about who your partner's dating or seeing. Or maybe the reason that you feel jealous is because of some unresolved issues that you have within yourself or within the relationship that you've not addressed to your partner. So this goes into communication. If you're able to communicate those things with your partner, then you might understand why it is that you feel insecure or jealous. And sometimes it's genuine reasons. Your partner spending a lot more time with their new partner and ignoring your relationship. At which point, that feeling of jealousy can be addressed on the terms of, hey, I feel neglected, and that makes me feel jealous, because now I see you engaging with this other person and you're much more excited about this relationship than you are about the relationship with me. and then you can negotiate having some more time dedicated or creating more intimacy in your relationship. Negotiating time is another challenge, and breakups, especially when things get complex. You can have a partner who's dating somebody else, who's your metamour, who then has a breakup, and now you have the challenge of trying to maintain a relationship with somebody that your partner is no longer dating, right? Hopefully, in the ideal scenario, your partner and your metamour, which is your partner's partner that you're not dating, sorry if I didn't explain that construct, if they have a breakup and you've formed a strong connection of friendship with your metamour, it wouldn't be fair necessarily of your partner to say, I don't want you talking to my former lover anymore. Because at that point, you're getting a sort of restriction and a boundary on who you're able to see as a human, as a friend, from somebody because they're hurt. And that needs to be addressed. Why are you asking me not to see this person? If that person hurt them or was toxic, maybe there's some reasons behind it. But if it was just a mutual breakup, then it would, the ideas of toxicity would land more into what's happening with your current partner that doesn't want you to see their former lover. And there's ways to engage in that. There's ways to approach that, to create boundaries and say, I still want to maintain a relationship with my metamour, but I won't let it transgress into this relationship. I won't mention it. I won't mention what's going on in their lives or something to that effect. So communication is one of the rewards, but it's also one of the challenges, because it challenges you to constantly reassess your relationship, your boundaries, and your needs. And I see that here. We're talking about communication in the chat. The open communication is what I find the most liberating. And that's from Boone. And I do too. I do too, Boone. And then we got Nicole saying, yes, communication has increased 100 times, having more intimate conversations and having the ability to understand. And I couldn't agree more with both of you. It's definitely been one of my favorite things about polyamory. It's been the thing that I've learned the most. And being a good communicator is the most transferable skill, the most absolutely transferable skill. Not only does it help you in this relationship, in polyamory, it helps you in all other relationships. And I don't want to be this like, everything's so peachy, but you know, it's helped me in my communications with friends. It's helped me in my communications with coworkers. It's helped me construct better emails, to be honest, because at this point, when you can fully put yourself into the shoes of another person for just a minute and engage compassionately in that sense, you can approach communication from an ethics forward stance, which is what you learn from polyamory. And it just makes things so much smoother. You tend to have less of those shitty fights and unnecessary conflicts with people. Conflict still exists, but you manage it better and it's more constructive. So communication is everything. I used to teach communication. It's also been an interesting way that these two lives have intersected, polyamory with communication that I've been teaching. So one of the lessons that I learned as I was teaching communication, if that's weird enough to say, is that communicators seek important but inherently incompatible goals throughout virtually all of their relationships. This means that conflict is imminent. It's gonna happen. The point is never to avoid conflict. The point is to engage conflict from a healthy perspective that engages your ethics and compassion, which are not necessarily the same thing. Compassion is one thing. It's being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes. Ethics also looks at notions of justice, your own needs and boundaries, because it's not always about bending to another person's will. Compassion can take you to an emotional point of connection, but you don't want to only have compassion and then ignore your own needs, because then you end up getting into a different type of toxic relationship with yourself, where you're not expressing your needs. You're not asking for what you want because you're too concerned about what the other person wants and needs, and you ignore your own. So communication is your toolkit to deal with jealousy. Another quote from Easton and Hardy that I really like. And think about this for a moment. What would it be like to love without attachment? To open our hearts to someone without expectations? Loving just for the joy of it, regardless of what we might get back. Imagine seeing the beauties and virtues of a beloved and letting go of how their strengths might meet our needs or how their beauty might make us look better. And that is a difficult challenge that Easton and Hardy have put forward. How do you not treat somebody as a, I don't know if trophy is the right word in this context, but as an opportunity to make yourself look better, right? How do you not use somebody else's body to signify your conquest? I'm dating a hot person, therefore I am what? I'm better, I'm winning at some game, right? It's difficult to get out of that mentality because in a capitalist patriarchy, we're used to treating each other as objects. We're used to commodifying each other. We're used to commodifying ourselves. We sell our images online. I'm in the process of being filmed as I speak. This is a form of commodifying, right? Instagram, it's what you're used to on social media. You become a brand. And how do you not engage in a relationship where you take on somebody else's brand as your personal achievement? I'm dating this person, therefore I too have worth. If we can step out of that mentality and look at each other honestly and do away with all of this, which is not an easy task, it's a good challenge in your relationship. Sit there with the people that you're dating and spend some time and do away with those layers. And ask yourself what it is about the people that you're dating that means a lot to you. What is it about them that is not these superficial layers that makes that relationship work? Where does the love come from? Okay. Well, if you're new to polyamory, what I would suggest is try to date experienced polyam folks, because they can teach you a lot. But don't take advantage. If you're not ready for this type of relationship, don't take advantage and go into a relationship and back out because you're scared. But that's not to say avoid relationships. If you meet an experienced polyam person, you can be upfront and honest and say, listen, this is my first time around. I'm going to encounter a lot of challenges. Are you willing to take on that work with me? And then you've asked for consent. And at that point, the work begins. And that consent gets renegotiated. Because that person can hold your hand for a while, but maybe they don't want to forever. And at that point, that relationship might have to change. Put your ethics up front. I've been harping about that since the beginning. Not just of this live, but of the entire podcast. Don't try to convert the monogamous. This is not evangelical work. You know, the best you could do is try to teach your monogamous friends who are convinced that monogamy is the right way just some of the lessons that you've learned from polyamory that might help them, such as communication, open honesty, and that sort of thing. Don't be discouraged if it fails. It will fail like all other relationships. The point is, do you want to have serial monogamy where you're heartbroken, or try to work within the confines of a monogamous relationship that might be inherently dissatisfying if you have other needs that aren't being met, sexual or romantic? So the question's in your hands. Do you want polyamory? And if so, work at it, because it is a challenge and it will have its rewards. Read a few books and articles about polyamory. There are plenty. And I think that aside from Easton and Hardy's Ethical Slut, which is very easy to consume, it's beautiful, it's simply written, and it just highlights some of the best points. It's not necessarily just about polyamory, so it has a wider perspective on sex positivity and sluthood, which I really like. There's also a lot of articles. There's academic articles on polyamory. They tend to be very statistical. And I was supposed to have an interview with Rhonda Balzerini, who does some of this work. Her work is typically on statistics and numbers within polyamory. So that interview might still happen after COVID. But there's also other critical work on polyamory. Again, I remind you to look into Kim Talbert's Decolonial Polyamory as well. Where to meet polyam folks? Facebook groups. There's a bunch for polyamorous dating. I can't remember right now. There's two Facebook groups. There's one for polyamorous dating, and there's one for polyamorous dating for 30 plus humans. 30 plus as in your age. FetLife. FetLife can be a good resource. It could be a shit show. There's lots of creeps there. So just, you know, be careful. And sex clubs, which are not open at the moment, but once they reopen, they sometimes have events. Oasis has had polyamorous dating nights. I've had talks like this at Oasis as well, where you can meet some other polyam folks. You can listen to podcasts on polyamory. There's a whole podcast dedicated to it called Multiamory. There's a few episodes that I did on my podcast. There's two with Steve Sanford. The first is called Steve Sanford's 21 Polyamory Hacks. It's wonderful. He's got a lot of experience. And the second is called Steve Sanford Makes a Polyam Agreement. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what that means later. But basically, it's how to set a sort of contract with your partners. And I'm being asked if it's Oasis in Louisiana. Sorry, no. It's Oasis in Toronto. Oasis Aqua Lounge. So I don't know what the Oasis is in Louisiana, but now I'm curious. And I also did an episode on polyamory. It's not strictly on polyamory, but I do have an episode with Yasmin, who's my partner, and we talk about our relationship, how we got engaged, some sort of, you know, DDLG dynamics, and polyamory. Now, the next few things that I want to talk about are from Steve Sanford's 21 Polyamory Hacks. From that episode, there's just a few things. Out of the 21, I want to talk about some of my favorites. They may not be your favorites, but I want to highlight these because they were important for me. If you want to look into it, check out the episode and then look at his full list. I think it's linked in the description of the episode. The first that really struck me was radical honesty. Freedom in hiding nothing. Now, this requires vulnerability, compassion, self-awareness, empathy, care, and discomfort. You're going to have needs that are not so comfortable to tell to your partner, because those needs might not be needs that your partner can meet. And when that happens, that can be hurtful. It can be hard for your partner to take. It can be hard for you to take if your partner is being radically honest with you. It might be hard for you to sit there and hear that your partner had a brilliant sexual experience with somebody other than you. Maybe somebody other than you is able to make your partner come, and you have been struggling with that. That could be a very difficult conversation to have. But rather than look at how that reflects on you and your insecurities, you could try to reflect on how you could learn from what happened with your partner so that you can be better at pleasuring your partner. What was it that happened in the sexual experience that you found so gratifying? What were the techniques that this person used that you enjoyed so much? And maybe you could try those things with your partner. And maybe they work, maybe they don't. But there's reasons why your partner is with you and why there's a fulfilling relationship that you have. And there's reasons that they have other partners that they seek different things from, because you are not going to be able to provide every need that your partner has. And this I will repeat for the people in the back. You cannot satisfy all your partner's needs. You just can't. And that is an important bit of honesty that you have to face yourself. If you try to satisfy all your partner's needs yourself, you're going to be struggling. It's an impossible task. This is why even in monogamous relationships, people have friends. They reach out to others because there's other needs that are being met by other people other than you. And those are important to them. Not only is that important to recognize in the sense that we need others in our lives to meet all our needs, but it's also important to realize that that would be a very difficult thing to ask of somebody. Hey, meet all my needs. And that is part of some of the toxicity that enters monogamy, is exactly that mentality, is we're looking to meet all the needs that our partners have. And we're expected to. And when we don't, when we inevitably fail, it creates conflict. And sometimes that conflict cannot be resolved in a healthy manner when you haven't assessed exactly what those needs are and why they can't be met by one person. And this is exactly why we're social animals and we have multiple relationships with multiple humans that are called friendships. So when people ask me about polyamory, what is it about polyamory that, or how do you see polyamory? I see it in the same way that I see friendship. If you're able to have multiple friends that meet different needs, then why not apply that model that seems to work fairly smoothly into your romantic model of relationships? For me, that's been the way that I've tried to approach it. And the sort of light at the end of the tunnel for polyamory would be my idealistic vision of it, is that we start treating relationships the way we treat friendships, where we're not jealous of each other's friends. Hopefully, you can still be that person. You can still be jealous that your best friend is hanging out with your other best friend. But again, jealousy is an event. It happens in all sorts of circumstances, and we deal with it in healthy ways. But I do want to see, or I do like to picture, sort of polyamory as a friendship model. How do polyam people see swingers is a question. It depends from person to person. I have not had the best experience with swingers. They tend to be very heteronormative and heterosexist. And sometimes they will treat their partners like objects for trade. Like, hey, you can fuck my wife and I'll fuck your wife. And they do a swap. And the men tend to do a lot of the talking in those relationships. And I've had swingers ask for consent from me to touch my partner. So already problematic territory. Why the fuck are you asking me to touch my partner? Do you not think that my partner might have a voice, or that they might not, you know, have the autonomy over their own body to be asked the question of whether or not they want to be sexually touched? This is not a game between dudes and their property. So I've had that experience with not one, not two, but multiple swingers. That's not to say they're all like that. I've not been through all the swinger communities, and I'm sure there's many that are plenty healthy and fine, but I've had a sort of like not so great experience around many swingers, and I think some of their mentality is rooted in some archaic views. So that's my perspective on swingers. Okay, another one of the polyamory hacks is introduce new partners to old partners as soon as possible. When Yaz started seeing this other guy, it was, I believe, their second date. And she proposed the idea of me coming by to meet him. And he was excited about it. He's a polyam veteran, if you will. And he's like, yeah, that's a good idea. I was a little nervous. And I said, you know, I don't want to interfere on your date. And she just said, no, come by for a little bit, meet him, and then you can go off on your way. And I go there, I meet him, we had a great time, we had a great conversation. In fact, we were getting along so good that Yaz had to go take a walk away from our conversation, came back and started filming us because she found the whole concept hilarious. What's good about that is that you diffuse the level of threat. If you imagine who your partner's dating, you might, your imagination might be a little, might be overdoing it. You're like, oh, they're so cool, probably. They're having the best sex. Who knows what? And it could feed your jealousy. If you meet them right away, you put humanity to this other person. And maybe you're like, wow, I really do want this person to be part of my life and part of my partner's life. Or maybe you don't. So it's good to meet them right away. Don't make rules you can't follow. I really like this. That was brought up by Steve in the episode. Rules you can't follow. Some examples. No penetration rule. I was in a toxic relationship in the past where we had a no penetration rule. And this was because my partner was extremely insecure and jealous and didn't want me penetrating any other women with my penis. And this sort of like phallocentric obsession is not something that I ever liked. I put up with it until it literally ended that relationship, because it places penile penetration as the apex of sex. It's like sex is not sex until you've had penis and vagina penetration. And that sort of hierarchical model of sex is not something that I like to practice. It's hard to step out of that mentality, truthfully. I'm not this person who goes out and I'm like, oh, you know. I recognize that that's a very important aspect of sex, and for testosterone bodies and for penis users, that tends to be the goal. And it's hard to ignore that goal. You have to be honest with yourself, but also part of doing the work of not making that your goal and not making coming your goal is to engage in all other types of sex. So the reason that I put up with that rule at the time was that it forced me to have non-penetrative sex and enjoy that limit. But she didn't come at it from a healthy place. And prioritizing, you know, penis and vagina sex as the apex of sex was not something I was ever comfortable with. So it ignores that digital penetration is also penetration. And it kind of makes lesbian sex seem less sex than penis and vagina sex, right? If you're putting it in this weird hierarchy. So it never really made sense to me. I didn't like it. And I don't recommend that as a rule. The one penis rule that I talked about earlier, if we're in a throuple or couple or whatever, you cannot have sex with anybody else with a penis. Again, that's territorializing, right? Your partner, it's treating them as property in a sense. Like you have access, but nobody else can. And the whole point of polyamory is to allow people to meet their needs on their terms, not yours. Don't ask, don't tell rule. This is a controversial one. Some people say that they have very healthy relationships where they prefer don't ask, don't tell policy. That means I go out and have sex and I don't say anything to my partner unless they ask. Did you go out and have sex? Yes. Okay. Otherwise, I don't mention it. Not the healthiest model, because you can encounter a lot of problems. I don't want to get into it too much, but you can imagine some of the problems that you would encounter from a don't ask, don't tell policy. There are people who swear by it, that it works, but Steve, who's been at it for a long time, is not fond of this rule, and he's quite cynical about it. Check out the episode if you want to hear. We talk at length about why the don't ask, don't tell is a controversial rule. No kissing rule. I've encountered this with swingers. There's something about the intimacy of kissing that some people want to preserve as a boundary for themselves, but again, it's a weird rule to have in polyamory, because the whole point of it is to enable freedom, right? The other thing that Steve mentioned was a jealousy sponsor, and this was really cool. This I didn't know about at all until he brought it up, and I'm a person who also experiences jealousy. I know the feeling. I know it makes me feel embarrassed at myself. And it's hard to talk about because I don't want to be that person. I want to do the work to get to a level of compersion. I want to get to a level where I watch my partner and I see their joy and it becomes my joy. So for me, jealousy as an event is something that I have to deal with, and I have to be honest and open about it and be able to have that conversation. So a jealousy sponsor could be a human. It could be the book that you read about polyamory, like The Ethical Slut. And when would you use a jealousy sponsor? So let's say your partner's out on a date and you're feeling insecure, you're feeling jealous. At that point, if you have somebody in your life who can have that conversation with you other than your partner, maybe you can call them up and say, hey, I'm feeling this way, my partner's out on a date. And if you pick somebody who's versed in polyamory, they can help you through those motions and those feelings. Or you could just crack open The Ethical Slut, read the stuff on jealousy, and remind yourself what your goal is and what you want to be, not what you are. So I said it before, and I'll say it again, jealousy is an event. It's not who you are. You're not a shitty person. It happens to all of us, but you can deal with it, and there's tools out there. It's your job to do that work on it. Primarily, you can ask for help, but don't expect it from anybody. And your assumptions about what happens in your partner's relationships are usually much worse than reality, which is why communication is important. And why the don't ask, don't tell sometimes conflicts heavily with polyamory is that when you don't know, you imagine the worst case scenario. So it's best that your partner tells you. And it's best that your partner can be allowed to tell you the good and the bad. So your partner doesn't just feel like they have to say, oh, it was an okay night, and then proceeds to list all the bad things that happened to make you feel better. They should be able to tell you, I came fucking hard 3 times, you know, and had a great time. And if that's not something you can hear, then you need to work at that. Or you need to create the boundaries in your relationship that work around that. You need friends to talk to about jealousy, so they could be your jealousy sponsor. And like I said, pick somebody more experienced than you, or pick a book. Now, from the second episode that I did with Steve Sanford called Steve Sanford Makes a Poly-Am Agreement, I would suggest listening to that episode and consider making a poly-am agreement with your partners. You can stipulate in that agreement the boundaries around consent, ethics, norms, what are the norms you want, and the consequences for breaking some of those agreements. And this can be extremely complicated when you get into multiple relationships with multiple humans and have metamours, and they have partners, and they could all be included in a poly-am agreement. I wrote here poly-fam agreement, which I think is pretty cute. So yeah, you can use that. Poly-fam agreement, it's your new family. It's a family you're creating. You get to make the rules. It's like playing The Sims, but better, because it's real life. So you get to create some of the boundaries and the norms that you want to have with the people in your life that are gonna and do mean the most to you. And consequences can be stipulated in there. If somebody fucks up royally, how do you deal with that in your polyfam, right? If somebody gets, for example, an STI from having unprotected sex and they didn't tell anybody, and then proceeds to spread it in the group, that's an unethical, non-consensual behavior. Do you boot the person out of the group? Do they have a chance to, you know, defend themselves? And what are the ways that you're going to deal with that? So you too can learn how to put together your own polyamory agreement with your partners, your metamours, your comets. These are people you occasionally have sex with, to cover the rules of consent, relationship dynamics, values and norms, amnesty and support, and veto power. And again, if you want to know more about that, you just got to listen to the episode, because there's a lot in there. And I don't know if I'm doing justice to it now, just breezing over this topic, but there is a whole episode out there called Steve Sanford Makes a Polyamory Agreement in my podcast. So to conclude, polyamory is great. It's not for everyone, but it is for everyone to learn from, to apply elsewhere in their monogamous lives or in their day-to-day lives, namely communication. There are many ways to practice polyamory, and part of the learning process is navigating which are the ways that work for you. Communication is not only key, it's your saving grace, it's your Bible, it's the thing you need to know and learn to successfully navigate polyamory. Jealousy is just an event that you could deal with together, but the work is on you primarily. And put your ethics up front. That concludes the me talking part of this at you. Thank you to everyone that has participated in this live. And I hope to produce more content for you that you enjoy, and to touch more on polyamory and to include more BIPOC voices in this conversation. If anybody does have BIPOC friends, educators, polyamorous folks that they could recommend to me, I would absolutely appreciate it. I would love to interview more BIPOC humans for this podcast, and Black trans sex workers, I would love to get their voices heard on this podcast, because they are some of the most marginalized humans in our sex positive communities, and I think their voices should be centered. And it's been a ongoing criticism of this podcast that I've not centered those voices. And it's feedback that I take to heart. And I do think that's an important thing. So if you do have suggestions, I would love to hear it. If not, I will do this work on my own. and try to seek those voices, to amplify them, and to use this platform to highlight their experiences, their needs. And I think it would be pretty good to undo some of the whiteness and white supremacy in these communities. So again, thank you everybody for being here, and I will see you at the next thing, whatever it may be. Stay healthy, stay safe.